The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices. Conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Hello, everybody. I'm Richard Gordon from WVUD's Campus Voices, and joining me here is
Michael Foster from Art Sounds, heard Mondays at 6:30.
And we are here talking with two of our colleagues from WVUD who are here to promote some events that are going on at the Delaware Art Museum. Stephen Leach, thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
And George Stewart, always a pleasure.
I'm pleased to be here myself.
Stephen, what is the exhibit that's going on right now at the Delaware Art Museum through, I believe, September 27th?
The exhibit is called Dream Streets, Art in Wilmington, 1970 to 1990. And it's an exhibition of art of various sorts from Wilmington artists who were working in and around Wilmington during that period of 1970-1990, covering visual art, literary art, kinetic art. Can we call cinema kinetic art?
Sure, why not? That's
okay.
It is.
And a little bit of choreography is in there, photography. It's basically everything, not everything, but many of the things that were happening in Wilmington and the Newark area during that period of time.
How did this come about? It seems like a really remarkable exhibit for any museum.
Really, it's surprising. It began for me when one of my colleagues said or sent me an email saying that the Art Museum is considering doing something about art in Wilmington. And suggested that I contact the art museum. And so I began to talk to them, and they realized that I had been kind of in the thick of it back then. And I came in and talked to one of the interns for a while. And all that discussion led to a lot of other folks who mm-hmm. were involved with the movement that either they couldn't find or they weren't aware of. So one thing led to another, and it kind of grew and grew. That's how it came about. You know, when you do things, in a social or cultural environment, they do last, it seems, you know, especially if some record is made of them somewhere.
Mm-hmm. What do you think they had in mind to do before they? I mean, you've talked about already all these different aspects of art that's going to be part of the exhibit. What do you think they had in mind before they met you?
Well, it's only my guess that because they are an art museum and they deal with visuals, that it would be limited to just visual things.
Mm-hmm.
That's only my guess, because I'm sure, you know, they had a lot of contacts who had been artists mm-hmm. or, you know, during that period of time. I expected it probably would have been in one of the smaller galleries.
But it seems to be one. Why'd they get the name Dream Streets?
That's interesting, the way that came about. Dream Streets was a publication that a number of folks and I started back in the late 70s. I wasn't the actual founder, but I was in the beginning of it. And my contact at the museum, Margaret Winslow, wrote me an email and said that she was inspired while, I think, taking a shower or something, and to call it Dream Streets, you know. And at first, I wasn't too sure about it, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't know who out there might resent it.
It is a small town, after all.
It is. And being in a small town, you understand that mm-hmm. dynamic. Mm-hmm. But she's basically said, trust me. And I said, all right, it's your show. So that's the way Dream Streets came about. I can tell you how Dream Streets came about, the publication, but that's a long story.
George, were you part of the movement that led to the Dream Street publication?
No, but Steve often incorporated my works, either my poetry or my illustrations or whatnot, in his various publications. He's done more than Dream Streets. He's been How many have you had, like five or six?
Well, yeah, Viewpoint, I started with that. I was somewhat associated with Tangent. Then I switched over to the local black press, the Spectator, the Delaware Spectator, the Delaware Star, a number of other publications that came after that.
Uh-huh. I had been involved with Tom Watkins' various publications, Expresso, not Expresso Tilt, that was Mike Walsh, but what were the titles?
Oh,
I can't remember them all anymore.
Emergency Illustrated.
Emergency Illustrated, right.
The Daily Plague.
Yeah.
They're all there at the, in the exhibit. Yeah.
About 2 years ago, the Art Museum came over to see me about, they said, we're going to be doing this stuff. Do you have anything? And I said, yeah, it's all down in my basement. So I never threw anything away, which is how a lot of these films ended up being selected, because we had them. I had them. They went through the files, and I said, oh, you got to talk to this person. You got to talk to Steve. You got to talk to Julie Gordon, who had taken photographs of all the things we did in Philadelphia. I mean, in Wilmington with the Sleaze Convention and the things like that.
And what?
We had a Sleaze Convention in 1976 or 77.
I'm surprised you weren't invited, Mike.
I wasn't around at that point. I was being sleazy somewhere else.
It was at the Rondo Center. The Rondo Center and the art gallery across the street, Rob Jones's art gallery, were the first of a proposed revitalization of Wilmington, one of the many attempts, and all doomed to failure, unfortunately.
It was a good idea, though.
It was, and we had a sleaze convention. We brought Edie Massey down from Pink Flamingos, Edie the Egg Lady.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And we had her host the Easter Egg Parade. We said to the government officials, the Wilmington officials, hey, we got a star in town, and you're having the Easter Egg Parade, the Easter Parade. She should lead it. And so we had an antique limo, and she's carrying a basket of flowers and giving out Easter eggs to the kids, and they were not amused.
Who wasn't amused, the kids or the officials?
I think more the officials. And we had Debbie Harry come down, who was with Blondie, mm-hmm. The band hadn't started yet. She said, hey, we got a new 45 out. Do you want a copy? I said, yeah, sure. And so I was one of the first to play the first Blondie 45. And Legs McNeil and from Punk Magazine, they have actually invented the term punk, or they mm-hmm. were the first to do that kind of thing. So that was one of our first big things. And then we had the comic book store in the Rondo Center, which showed Outre films. And I was a booker for that. And then I ended up at the State Theater later on.
See, I didn't move to the area till 1983, and I had no idea.
Oh, you missed a lot of good times.
That Wilmington had this history of having a vibrant art scene.
And what's interesting is the vibrant art scene was in various subsections, and they would sometimes cross over and sometimes they wouldn't. So it's been interesting for me to see the exhibit and seeing what other people were doing that I had wasn't involved in or had forgotten about. And it's just fascinating, the richness of all that's been was going on back then.
Now, I didn't realize you were at the State, too. How is it that you got into film like that?
Well, I was actually one of the few film majors at the University of Delaware with Professor Gerald Barrett. And Steve took one of his classes.
Yeah,
right?
I think it was either a winter course or a summer course that Gerald Barrett and Norman Sosowski were teaching.
Yeah, the sculpture professor.
No, you're thinking of Spinsky.
Oh, Spinsky. He taught the film class with Barrett.
Oh, did he? I remember Norman Sosowski was a part of that class. But as I said, it was either in the summer or the winter room, and I can't remember which.
I remember in the winter, they would take January and February. It was a chance to break outside of your major.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do 6 weeks of intensive study, and Barrett would do, 1 year it was Hitchcock films. We saw just about every Hitchcock mm-hmm. movie, including The Silence. We saw German cinema, silent German cinema. We saw Russian cinema, and he did...
Charlie Chaplin.
Did he? I don't remember Chaplin. I remember he did French cinema in the 30s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Rules of the Game and
Grand Illusion.
Yeah, all the great films. Yeah.
Bizarre. I mean, it was really an in-depth background that Barrett gave us. It was very rich, and until the advent of video, it was impossible to get anywhere else. I mean, it was
now. Okay, so you're involved in this program,
right? I was actually a TA in one of them, in the film. I've been making that film since I was 17.
So you are a producer as well as a historian?
I'm a filmmaker.
What kind of film?
Well, for a while, commercially, I did a lot of industrial stuff.
You're proud of.
They're avant-garde experimental cinema. I'm a very devout formalist, which means usually hell with the narrative. This is an important element of cinema, and we're going to explore it. So it can be rather rigorous and less than exciting to people if they don't get on the wavelength.
So. Now, one of the reasons that Michael's got George talking about the films is that every so often during this Dream Street exhibition at the
Delaware Art Museum,
they're having special events. For example, on Thursday the 18th, you've got a poetry reading.
That's right. It's a Dream Street's poetry reading. It kind of represents the early years of Dream Street's. Everyone except the last reader is someone who was part of Dream Street's in the very early years. We've come back, in a sense. One of us has come from New York to be in the event, to read. In basically a chronological order, the first reader will be Lou Bennett, who actually is one of the founders of Dream Streets, all the way through the first Second Saturday reading, which was a Dream Streets project of a group back then that we called the Eschaton Writers, which kind of grew out of itself, in a sense.
And some of our listeners will be hearing this after that. But on Thursday, July 23rd, George, you've got the special event.
Well,
as part of the
exhibit. Curated the Dream Street Poetry event, and I've curated the Outre Cinema evening. So, yes.
And that's going to be Thursday the 23rd at 6:30 p.m.
Yes, and it's a nice selection. What happened was nobody ever kept their films except me, because I keep everything. And I had put on a film festival, an evening of experimental films at some point in the 70s, and nobody picked up their movies. So the bulk of the program, a lot of the films are mine, and then there's the ones that people just left sitting and didn't come back and pick up, which is good because they're very representative. John Pittis and you kept your film.
I kept mine, yes.
And that's a good one. Tell them about that.
that's a film that I made while I was living for a short spell up in Boston, or Cambridge, actually. I got a hold of some black and white Tri-X Super 8, and I had a camera. And I just sort of fashioned in my head a little bit of a plot, because I only had maybe 8 minutes to work with. But I guess its claim to fame, and I think this is what you're alluding to, is that one of my actors was in a couple of movies by Andy Warhol.
Okay.
He made two Andy Warhol films and a third, and that one was mine.
We'll work for food.
Yes.
What I like about your film is it tells a story, but it tells it without a plot. You do it by the staging of the actors, the way they move through the frame. You understand the relationship between all the characters.
It worked. Yes,
that's what I mean about formalist cinema.
Mm-hmm.
That you communicate in a way using the base elements of the medium. So,
and you have to see the film to understand that.
What we're talking about. Flash Rosenberg has a very interesting piece. It'll close out the evening. George Fox has some fun pieces, so they're in there. And the people that did Arden Films, Jerry Milstein and Mark and Georgie Marchese, will be showing two of their pieces. They were the ones that did the first filmmaking course at the University of Delaware in 1971 as a winter term session. And that's, I hadn't joined the university at that point as a student, and I signed up for that, and that was a very great experience for me.
Out of the Campus Voices website, we'll put up a copy of the poster that the Doe Art Museum has put out about the advertising this Outsider Cinema Newark and Wilmington experiment. Filmmakers, 1970 and 1984, and in the back row, Michael, I'm showing it to you. Do you recognize the guy in the middle of the back row?
The one with hair.
Yeah.
That's me in my prime.
It's with us. Very, very so serious.
Yeah, it's what I said to him.
Very serious, long-haired look. It looks to me, just from this picture and from the way you two are talking, that Wilmington and parts of the university campus really were hopping and happening
yes.
places.
Yes.
I might touch on one little thing about the film course that Jerry Barrett,
mm-hmm.
that we didn't touch on, but I was influenced a lot in my short career as a filmmaker. And that is that he had a session where he had what they called underground movies there.
From the 60s and 50s and 60s.
Right. Stan Brakhage actually
right.
came.
Yes.
Robert Downey.
Yes.
Not Junior. Robert Downey yeah. actually came.
He did Putney Swope and Greaser's Palace. He came down here. Right. And I became friends with him through another film festival.
Well, I may not have ever heard of some of Warhol's movies uh-huh. had it not been for that exposure
uh-huh.
to what they called underground movies.
Oh, that was invaluable.
Yeah, it was.
Remember when they had the Theater of the Ridiculous come down here?
That one I missed.
Oh, okay. But, all right. That was a great evening. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We're reminiscing here.
Well, that's better than anything we could have planned.
That's what community radio is all about, George.
Yes. But I do have a sort of serious question here. It'll sound like a wrap-up question, but I have no idea where we are in the show. You had all of this activity going on,
right.
and I understand that it's underground activity to a degree, and probably many of the people in Wilmington and Newark and elsewhere had no idea that this was going on. But do you think that you made some, I'm not saying impression, but do you think that you've started something that is continuing now, that you've influenced in any way? No, okay.
Film's dead. Nobody knows the history of cinema anymore. People in their 20s now will say, that's an old movie, 1990.
Yeah.
You know, they've been making movies since 1900, actually 1896, if you want to get technical about it. So, you know, that's what bothers me most, that people are unaware of the history of cinema, and nobody's rigorous anymore about film studies or aesthetics.
Well, I guess my question is more of...
about the art scene.
Yeah, do you see anything going on in Wilmington and Newark that is a result of the activity that is being celebrated at the Delaware Art Museum?
Well, let's put it this way. Continue on what George says, no one knows the history of anything culturally.
Well, that's certainly true.
They certainly don't know the literary history, the visual history, you know, paintings. They heard of Wyeth and the Brandywine tradition, but they don't know what went on in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this exhibit is so important, because it does make a historic statement in a public way. It enters the consciousness in a very special way. And it's that awareness,
mm-hmm.
that universal consciousness or collective consciousness upon which those who are working now will build.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I think we will influence them. We don't know how, but I think because a record has been made of it in a public way, there will be those who will be able to stand on the shoulders of those who came before.
So you're seeing the influence perhaps coming from the exhibit as much as from the activities in the original time.
Yeah.
But it's the most coherent. It's the first time I've seen a coherent narrative about what was going on in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And the catalog is a nice overview of what
it
was
is
happening.
Nice. And the catalog is the most important part, because it's the thing that lasts. After the paintings are taken down and the exhibits broken up, the catalogs will still be in the libraries, you know, in people's homes, will be accessible some way or other.
Well, the museum's going to keep the films, too, at least some of them.
That's nice.
Yeah, I was pleased with that. In case the house burns down, my films will live on.
Right.
You know, what just struck me is that you all were talking about you had these facilities all around, and I'm sure that they were facilities that were either rented or purchased by whoever was running them. And I was just thinking how often the city of Wilmington has tried to bring the arts to downtown.
Yes.
But it's always in an official way. It's always the government doing it instead of this sort of...
And that doesn't work as well as the grassroots way these guys did
right.
it.
Right, and that's the way it's worked. I mean, after George and Tom Watkins and Rob Jones started it, other folks came in. You found the DCCA. The DCCC, these are all letters, but they mean things, right? They came in. Galleries started to come in, and it grew over the years. I mean, it did get a little bit of encouragement from the city government and some developers. But basically, I think the impetus, the force came and began with Tom and George and Rob Jones.
Rob Jones, yeah.
And he's a giant. He really is.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Jones.
It took
Tom Jones is a giant too, but in a different field.
Right. It took a lot of guts for him to do what he did.
Yeah, he was the first one. I think he was. Even before Tom.
And he supported us.
He always got ads. But then around 79 or whatever, when Barry opened the State Theater, the whole energy to me seemed to move back down to Newark.
I think it had to. I mean, Wilmington.
It didn't last.
Didn't last. Yeah. But it hung on. It hung on.
And the other thing that helped back then is the News Journal actually supported what was happening in the town. It wasn't all rip and read, wire copy. We got a lot of coverage from the newspapers on our events. The News Journal would always give us, you know, the under the fold. Below the fold on the entertainment section, on whatever we were showing, a movie or doing the sleaze convention and things like that.
It sounds like you're going back to the good old days when a local paper was a local paper.
Yes.
And the local art community was a local art community, and it wasn't all packaged in some headquarters
well, not
city.
Only that, you if you talk to people in the newspaper world today, they'll tell you that nobody cares about reading about arts. They don't do that.
The odd thing is the Rondo Center, which was the nexus next to Rob Jones's gallery, which was catty corner to us, what used to be a newspaper office. It was there were 9 newspapers in Wilmington in the 1900s. We were in the building of one of them, and upstairs there were huge wooden beams across the ceiling where they would hang the linotype machines, big heavy machines that with molten lead in them that made the type.
And were really noisy.
Yes, very noisy. And molten lead is not something you want to sit next to
right.
8 hours a day or more.
Right. I believe that was the every evening that was in that building.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Okay. All right.
We're talking with George and Steve about the Delaware Art Museum's presentation, Dream Streets Art in Wilmington, 1970 to 1990, an exhibition that'll be there through September 27th. And George is curating a film event that will be on July 23rd, and Stephen's curating a poetry event on July 18th. I think Michael's question several minutes ago was a really key one to me, that idea of this sounds like the exhibition is like a snapshot of what was going on, and there's been a disconnect since that time period through now, and you're hoping that this exhibition will rekindle some of that spirit.
Well, I think a lot of people have been actually creating since 1990 and throughout the last decade of the 20th century into the 21st. Like us back in the 70s and 80s, people weren't aware that we were doing it, but we were doing it. And I think there are people out there who are making art now who will surface, you know, in much the same way we have through the efforts of people with vision who suddenly see it all happening. In some way we'll keep the history going, because this is just another chapter in the art history of this area, beginning with the Brandywine tradition and before, you know, going through the WPA years and the studio group and us. It's just another chapter, and the current chapter is now being written.
But this Delaware Art Museum program, as you, one of you said earlier, is just wonderful about it. It's not just paintings. It's paintings, writings, video, sculpture, just about everything.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me about what they did was they decided on a narrative where I was the filmmaker, Steve was the poet. We all got put in the boxes, and the truth is,
everybody was doing everything.
Yeah, I mean, I was a poet, I guess, a writer, and an illustrator, and a filmmaker, and was doing radio at the same time. And when the scene in about 86 for me basically ended, I put most of my energy into my radio show. That became the creative outlet for me. And I wanted to ask you, Steve, if that's, you do bop time every Saturday, starting at like before anybody in the world gets up, right, around 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, and then to 10 o'clock. I do Crazy College on Sunday nights at six. And I've put a lot of my creative energy into doing the show. And I wonder if you've done the same thing.
Well, interesting to note that my earliest involvement mm-hmm. with WXDR at that time was to do a poetry show called Dream Streets.
Which still lives on.
It still lives on. And my thinking behind that was that poets, you know, their work appears on a page somewhere. And in some cases, you know, at a reading in a bar or cafe or library. And I said, wait a minute, we can reach a lot of people on the radio.
And the thing is, you know, poetry really needs to be heard, not read. I mean, it really takes on a richer life.
Especially nowadays when poetry morphs into things like spoken word mm-hmm. and rap. It is a more auditory experience. Mm. And it does work that way.
I think it's entirely appropriate that you're involved with this, Stephen, because since I've been here, I have seen all of these activities that you've been involved in, not just the radio shows, and there are two, which the Dream Streets show that's going on now, to chronicle, but not just chronicle, to make people aware of Delaware literature, as you're doing with Dream Streets at 1 on Monday afternoons here at WVUD, the articles that you've written about jazz in Wilmington, and who would have known that there was that much activity going on, and your radio, your Saturday morning radio show where you bring all these people together.
Those are some of my favorite times when you have people come in and you talk about and play records from Wilmington's jazz history.
And that's one thing that's actually missing from this Delaware Art Museum show, and that's the music. A lot of great music is going on, but it's still going on.
Well, let me remind people that you may not have heard this yet, that the WVUD is going to do a concurrent piece with this. We're going to do a night of videos from the 70s and 80s.
All right.
In fact, we're looking for local bands from that period that have film or video, because there isn't much, and it is wildly big holes in what we have on the thing. So if you got something, I want to hear about it.
And that means there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yes, and that's going to happen in September.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Campus Voices and
Art Sounds.
Stephen Leach and George Stewart, talking about the Delaware Art Museum's Dream Streets Art in Wilmington, 1970 to 1990.
And the scene itself.
The scene itself back then.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to go to the Campus Voices website to get a picture of George with air. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.